Godfrey Cambridge, writer, comedian, actor, whose long career first received national recognition only in 1964. He has appeared in 8 Broadway plays, 7 movies, dozens of television shows, and is the author of Put-Ons and Put-Downs. Mr. Cambridge is interviewed by theater critic Howard Junker.
Mr. Cambridge, you've made 5 films recently and are now starring in a Broadway comedy. Is there any chance that you'll be typecast as in non-racial roles?
Well, I hope so. I hope that it'll get to a point where they don't even think about, you know, what the race is, because I've played everything from an Irishman without benefit of makeup, and I play a Jewish cab driving by Braverman, which is scheduled for a March release. So that I look forward to a point when, you know, I can just work on anything I want to do, just say I am and go right into it. Now, in the play How to Be a Jewish Mother, I play, about 5 or 6 Jewish characters, and then all of a sudden it shakes people up because they suddenly realize the character that I started off playing in one particular segment or sketch happens to be black, you know. But I think it makes the theater more interesting. I like to see interest, excitement in the theater.
Does it cut against the fight for getting roles for Negro actors?
No, I think it helps to an extent. I feel that they're going to get to a point one of these days when they're going to realize that sometimes you can enrich a role by having it played by another ethnic group, etc. I know that one of the reasons that I am in How to Be a Jewish Mother is the fact that Molly Picon's husband, Yonkel, said, you know, if we have 2 Jews on stage shrugging, it might become boring, so we'll introduce another ethnic group and enrich the play, and I think that it has in many instances. Because I look upon it this way. The theater is in need of enrichment, in need of new things, and they have established their own stereotypes, and I have seen more gray-eyed Indians than I would care to count. So that if they have gray-eyed Indians, well, they might as well have black, white people. So that the theater is a theater of illusion, and we manage to create illusions, whether through the use of makeup or just by fiat, but we do it. And I think this is to the theater's advantage. Because Hello, Dolly was dying on the vine after a long, successful run. And in the words of George G. Nathan, the late George G. Nathan, who I admired greatly, he said, "Bring on the Negroes." And they did, and the show has been revitalized because everybody's saying, "Gee, I wonder what they would do with it," you see. And one of the joys of the theater is the fact that we manage to, when you bring in another actor to do the exact same role, you look at it sometimes in amazement. I looked at my understudies or my standbys and I said, "My goodness, I would never have thought to do that line."
Are they Negroes?
Sometimes there have been, other times there haven't, you know. And I said, "I would never have thought to do that line that way." And that's, I think, the fascinating thing about the theater is that for every human being, there is a different variation, and he brings something else, and he has different thinking, and it's unique to his own being. And I think that this makes for a very interesting thing in the theater.
Do you have an understudy in How to Be a Jewish Mother?
Mm-hmm. And he's Negro. He's Tiger Haynes. He's my standby. Yeah. But it's, I think one of these days, I hope for the ideal, when we get to a point where it's just simply a matter of talent. For example, Diana Sands is doing St. Joan now, and the brouhaha is, "Oh, they have a black St. Joan." And it always amuses me when people go out and research things and say, "Oh my goodness, they have a black St. Joan." And I begin to say, well, so what? You know, can't you do the part? Which is what's really important. Because they always seem to research to prove that I wasn't there. You know, Walter Kerr, who said in one interview or something or the other, you know, he said that he couldn't believe that Negroes were in some play or the other because it shocked his reality, his sense of reality. And I said, nonsense. You know, how many Italians were at the Battle of Waterloo? Nobody cares. The fact that men were there and they died seems most important. So that I think it behooves us to move more and more into this area where we get into the area of talent and the acceptance of men for what they are.
Clive Barnes wondered after How to Be a Jewish Mother opened why you had gotten involved. Is it a simple matter of it being what you were offered? Or?
Well, no. Fortunately, I'm in a place now where it's a matter of choosing, more or less. I thought the combination of Molly and myself would be very good. Because I dug her, you know, I felt man, we could get some kind of love communication going here. And the play that we opened on Broadway has absolutely nothing to do with the play that we opened originally in Philadelphia. And we started making changes on the road. And what happened was, I said, well, I think about time for me to do a play. You know, everybody said, when are you coming back to the theater? Which is another word for when are you going to starve? And I felt I could afford the luxury of the theater for at least a season or so, because I was making a lot of money in nightclubs and motion pictures. And why work in those fields unless it can give you the right to go back and go back to your roots in the theater? So I got involved with this, and I thought, well, if it's a success, then it will give me an opportunity to write a novel that I've been storing in my head for the last year and a half or so, 2 years. And I wrote one book already. I threw together a little book, which I did on tape recorders and on planes and in hotel rooms, but I wanted to write an in-depth novel. And I felt this would allow me the opportunity. Plus, I would be playing in the theater, and I would be getting, as opposed to the theater, to the theater. So there I am, exposed in all flanks, and we have met the enemy, and I don't know, they are ours, with mixed results.
What's the novel going to be about?
Well, the novel deals with an Edwardian Negro who happens to be living in the 20th century. He would have been marvelous if he lived in about, oh...
What's an Edwardian Negro?
Well, he's a Negro who is very English, has a tendency to wear velvet knickers, and works in a psychiatric institution, and they wonder whether he's crazy or they're crazy. And it's his assault on society, and it's a comic satiric treatment, and it has some very comical situations, and it also has a situation dealing with how lonely we really are and how we find it very difficult to communicate with each other. I have a scene in which the character and I go to a dingy industrial bar in Jersey City, and we're both wearing knickers and tweeds and caps in this industrial little bar. And the impact of us on this bar and the denizens of this bar is quite amusing and revealing of them and of this particular character. So I've been dealing with it I've been more or less packing it out, placing it out on the paper, and I now want to get it done with. So if I'm allowed to, if we run, and I think we will, I look forward to writing it.
But how would the success of the Broadway show allow you? You're certainly not going to make the kind of money that you would from more films.
No.
Or playing Vegas.
No, I get daily testimonials from my accountant. Who needs it, my goodness? Who needs art? But no, it will allow me one thing, and that is I will be able to stay in one place. I won't be running for planes all the time, etc. So that's one thing it allows me. It allows me to stay in one place and have more or less most of my days free. And the weekends I'll go out, of course, and play concerts probably. But that's the main thing. Its main thing is that it will hold me in one place for a given period of time so that I can get the work done. Because you can't, right? When I do one night, I've done things like left New York on a Friday morning, flown to Seattle, Washington, played a concert Friday night, Seattle, Washington. Saturday night, played Maryland State University in Maryland. Sunday afternoon, did a concert in Hartford, Connecticut, and then had a business dinner, in Westport, and then driven back to New York, and you start on the following Tuesday on another series of one-nighters, So it gets so things just sort of blur, It's like, what is the hotel? And you don't even have to see the auditorium, You send your man in and say, look, check it out, and get the mics ready, you go and you do it, So when you're living like that, you really can't have much time to think, other than to write things for my act, which comes out of the papers every day.
What's it like to come back to the theater after working in so many films?
Well, I tell you, it's an interesting experience in that there's a different method of working in the theater. See, I've worked in clubs and concerts. I've done a lot of concerts, and I have a 3-year deal in Vegas. And so I write my own material. I'm my own arbiter. And you get sort of used to looking at a piece of material that you've written, and you say, Godfrey, old boy, it looked brilliant when you conceived it, but it's a piece of garbage, and you say, I'm not going to do it, Or you go out and you say, well, I'll put in a piece of it tonight, and if that works, then I'll put in the rest of it tonight. Whereas when you get into the theater, suddenly you have people writing material for you. And the theater has a certain technique whereby they say, well, just learn it then. We'll put it on its feet and see how it goes. And I'm used to looking at a piece of material and evaluating. So that's a piece of garbage. That is garbage. And, you know, they get horrified. So, well, you don't know. Let's get it on. I can look at it and tell it's garbage, you see. So in the legitimate theater, you learn the piece of material that you know is terrible. And you put it in, and they say, yeah, it didn't go too well. That means it went awfully. So now we do it about 3 or 4 more times, and you're driven to distraction. And finally, somebody says, yeah, I think we better take it out. Was I going to save them all that time by telling them it was rotten when I first read it, and that they were just using this piece of material to forestall because they had nothing else to do? So they said, well, we'll do this, and while we're doing this, maybe we'll think of something else. So it's a method of work that's a little strange, and it's hard work. You know, we closed one version of our show on a Saturday night in Chicago. We rehearsed Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, 12 hours. And Wednesday matinee, we open an entirely different version of the show. So that's a little terrifying. And as you get out on stage, you don't know where you are. And it's okay if you, say, have a giant cast. But we didn't have a giant cast. You know, we just got two Indians, Molly and myself. You know, and you get out there and you think, where do we go next? I don't know. Every time the lights go out of the black eye, you're saying, what's next? What's next? And the stage manager's yelling at you to tell you where you're going from there. So it's a whole different discipline of work.
Are there some new roles that you'd like to do, say, how about Nat Turner in the film, if you could?
I haven't read it, but I guess there is a possibility if Sidney Poitier turns that down. But I don't know what I would like to do next. There's a Malcolm X biography, which is going to be done. One of them is going to be done. But as of the moment, I have had such a wide range of roles, like in the President's Analyst, I play a CIA agent, that I would just like to go on just making films rather than necessarily problem films, per se, because I feel that generally I can attract a bigger audience and I can accomplish more by doing a non-say problem play or picture. If I just go into the cast and do my work, I feel that I can establish an image that ought to be more prevalent in America and without raising any flags. See, because as a country, our artists in this country, because of various pressures, have not been able to do good racial commentary stories. They really have not. They have shown a kind of paternalistic nonsense, you know, like I did a takeoff a long time ago on one of my comedy albums about Stanley Kramer's The Defiant Ones, in which he would have me believe that this black man was chained to this white man on a chain gang in the South, which I considered implausible because they only had integrated chain gangs, so they knew how to punish this white fella. But then at the end, this black man is going to throw himself off of the train, you know, to be with his white brother. That's ridiculous. Why didn't he run off, get on the train, go north, and send him a cake with a file in it? But it's absurd to think that he is going to jump off that train to be with his white brother when he knows he's going to catch double hell in comparison to his white friend. So they get sort of paternalistic and they lose sense of the reality. And I look at all those things, and it's kind of an embarrassing liberal trying to do something and not really succeeding. I haven't seen Look Who's Coming to Dinner, but I don't think that will be any great shakes either, you know.
Yeah, that's a very good reason for continuing to work in non-racial roles. Thank you very much, Godfrey Cambridge.
Thank you very much.